Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline.ag. Let's hear it for fall. The cooler weather, the change in leaves, and the massive amount of sports betting action. It's all about NFL and college football, as well as the World Series and the NBA, NHL seasons right around the corner. Get in the mix at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the Silver State. We are out here at the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0, and it is Sunday night, and we are watching the Dallas Cowboys play the New Orleans Saints. I don't even know what the Monday night football game is, but I'm happy to report the Cleveland Browns got on track and scored another win, 2-2 for the season. I'm still pulling for these guys to have 10 wins this season, and hopefully they got that offense dialed in, defense is going good, and we'll see what happens. College football, god dang, man, Clemson was in a damn nail biter. Mack Brown almost had those Carolina Tar Heels in a position to beat Clemson. Instead of going for the tie on the last play of the game, he went for the two-point conversion to go for the win. Instead of just tying it up and sending it overtime. Man, the play didn't go as planned, but I tell you what, man, that was a nail-biter. Clemson and Dabo Sweeney, they got lucky to come out of there with a damn W. So that was a very interesting game. But, Kristen, are you ready to go back to Los Angeles?
No.
Man, we just got these two little cats, and we named them Poncho and Lefty. It's a black cat and a white and black cat, and they're going to be our barn cats. What's that?
They're siblings.
They're brothers and brothers. Well, they're brothers. We thought one of them was a guy and a girl. Turns out they're boys.
Yeah.
So we got two male cats. They're kittens, and hopefully they will fend off and start eating mice, rats, and what else we got here? Gophers. We got all kinds
gophers,
of stuff for them.
Muskrat.
They ain't no muskrat. Now, they ain't no skunk either. Skunk's pretty damn salty. Yeah, well, hopefully the coyotes, the mountain lions, and the bears don't eat their ass. Anyway, man, I tell you what, it's been a hell of a little thing going on there. A friend of mine out here, Jim Irwin, and his wife, Annalise, got us these cats. And his cat is a real ham, and that is a mouse-catching son of a gun. So that's what we got these cats for, and they will be staying here in Nevada while we go back and forth to Cali. And we got a guy to feed them and take care of them while we're gone and all that stuff. So it's one thing, Chris, man, we've been out there playing with those cats, bonding with them, and now we got to leave them. So I'm kind of sad about that.
I am very shocked.
And you've been out there messing with your horse, Rebel. You got a chance to ride a little bit.
Yeah.
And now you bonded with him again, and now we got to pull a Hank and get out of here. It always sucks when we get out here and get all settled in, because it takes us about 5-6 days to decompress out of Los Angeles mode and get into, man, out here in country mode and actually relax a little bit. So, hell, as soon as we get relaxed, I got something coming up, and we got to get out of here. But one of the good things we got coming up October 6th through October 10th is the Kawasaki Dealer Convention out there in Palm Springs. And we do this every year. It's like a four-day vacation for us. It's a working vacation because I'm doing work. So I go out there and I hang out and I meet with all the people from Kawasaki. And we've got some really interesting things that are going to be dropping on that date that have never been seen before. So I'm looking forward to getting my eyes on these things and being able to drive them. So I'll be like a kid in a candy store. And we take Moolah and Callie with us. And we got this this place rented. It's all kayfabed in. It's barricaded in. Dogs cannot get out. So that way we can go out there, have a few cocktails, enjoy ourselves. The dogs can have fun, lounge by the pool, and not be in any worry of getting lost. That's one of our big worries when we go do things with the dogs. So anyway, lots of good things going on out here in Nevada, getting ready to head back to the mean streets of Los Angeles, and looking forward to going down to, I don't know if it's Anaheim or Staples Center, I just know I'm going to be on Friday Night SmackDown on Fox Network. It's shifted over from USA Network, it's headed over to Fox. I'll be there, Hulk Hogan's going to be there, Undertaker's going to be there, Ric Flair, Sting, and all the other WWE superstars. So it's going to be one hell of a damn, it's going to be like a reunion, really. But everybody's going to have their game face on. Everybody's going to go out there and pull out their bag of tricks. I'm sure I'll go out there and do something. I'm looking forward to it. Tune in, set your DVRs to a new channel, a new time, a new network, all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing all the guys and girls again, because I had a blast the last time I went over to New York City. I've been making rounds as of late, doing a lot of WWE stuff, and, you know, I don't know how long these appearances are going to keep up, but it just seems to happen that I've done quite a few over the last few months, and I've enjoyed them. So it is what it is, and that's all it is, and we'll see what happens from here. Hey, man, let me tell you a little about today's podcast. When Kristen and I bought this Broken Skull Ranch 2.0 out here in Nevada, I was wondering, you know, how the car scene was going to be. Was there going to be any, you know, good mechanic shops, a place to, you know, do work on trucks, stuff like that? And about that time, I bought a 66 Chevy C10 pickup from my buddy, C.T. Fletcher. And I remember going over to C.T.'s and we were doing a podcast together. And I looked at that old truck and I said, God dang it, CT, it had a tarp on it. I said, man, what are you going to do with that old truck? And so I guess I caught him at the right time, and we made a deal, and he sold that truck to me. And when I got down here, I started posting some pictures of it. And someone said, hey, man, you need to check out Travis over at CTP Concepts, because he can get you dialed in on that 66 C10. Well, my guest on the show today is Travis Pruis, and he's the owner of CTP Concepts, and he's like a custom fabricator, builder, one-stop shop. Whatever you need done, this guy can do. And I went down to his shop the other day to check on his project that he's working for the SEMA show, and we'll talk about that in the podcast. And when I went down there, his dad was down there, Butch. His dad is a Vietnam veteran. And we hit it off right off the bat, talking about Corvettes and fast cars, motors, and all that stuff. And those guys are like, if I'm like really into cars, these guys are like really into cars on steroids, because, man, they got it in their DNA and in their blood. So, man, we hit it off right off the bat, and we started telling car stories and swapping stories about this, that, and whatever. And I said, man, we got to get together and just do a podcast telling stories. So I said, man, what are you guys doing this Sunday? And he said, hey, man, we'll meet down here at the shop and we'll swap out some stories. So today's podcast, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I get to talk to two guys. One is a former Marine from in the Vietnam War, and his son, Travis Pruis. I'm talking with Butch and Travis about cars, trucks, building stuff, and all kinds of stuff. And it was just a good BS session of three guys sitting in a shop trading stories. And as much as I love to talk about wrestling and all the other stuff that I get a chance to talk about, it was a breath of fresh air for me to talk about something that I love so much. And my wife is over there sneezing her fool head off, so she was trying to kayfabe the sneezes. She's trying to kayfabe the sneezes with a blanket and a sweater and everything pulled over her mouth. I'm sitting there thinking, God dang, I don't want to do this open again. So if you heard her sneezing, maybe she's allergic to cats. We got two cats for sale. And if Butch don't buy my Corvette, I'm going to put it on eBay. Hey, man, I hope you enjoyed today's show, because I had a great time talking to Travis and his father, Butch. It's three guys in a shop shooting a breeze and talking gears. I enjoyed this conversation very much, again, because I love cars and trucks and all that stuff so much. I hope you enjoy me getting the chance to take a breath of fresh air and speak about something else. Please enjoy the show. All right, you know how I roll. On Saturdays at 316 Gimmick Street, it's all about college football. And right now is a great time to get in on all the sports betting action across the college football gridiron. Here's what we got this weekend. It's the University of Georgia taking on Tennessee. Iowa squaring off against the Wolverines of Michigan. Michigan State versus Ohio State. And a big clash between two top 10 teams with Auburn up against Florida. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, betonline.ag, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1. Again, that's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet. In case you haven't heard, WWE SmackDown is coming to Fox. It all kicks off on this Friday, October 4th, with a huge 20th anniversary celebration. This event is going to be lights out. Just check out this lineup of WWE superstars and legends. Roman Reigns, Sting, The Undertaker, Goldberg, Hulk Hogan, The Nature Boy, Ric Flair, and yours truly, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And get a load of some of these matches. Kofi Kingston defending his WWE Championship against The Beast, Brock Lesnar. Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair taking on Bayley and Sasha Banks. And Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon in a ladder match. Oh, hell yeah. It's the greatest night of superstars the WWE has ever seen as a new era of SmackDown begins on Fox. Don't miss the premiere of Friday Night SmackDown this Friday night, October 4th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, only on Fox. And that's the bottom line.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Hey, what, we're just sitting there BSing over here at CTP Concepts. And when I first came out here to Nevada, God's country, Nevada, I never really dropped the town. But we're over at my buddy's shop, Travis, at CTP Concepts, sitting with him and his father, Butch. And Butch, you're a Vietnam veteran.
Yes.
Thank you, sir, for your service.
You're welcome.
And I've been following you a little bit just because Travis was telling me you did some body work for him and stuff like that. But anyway, dude, when I first came to the area, I was like, man, what's the car scene going to be here? And I started looking around, and I just got this 66 C10 pickup truck. And it's short bed. It's blue, 350 crate motor, 4-speed automatic floor shift. And I posted some pictures of it, and they said, hey, man, you got to check out Travis over at CTP Concepts. And I'm like, all right, man, let me see what this dude's up. And I started following you on Instagram. I said, man, this guy really knows his stuff. He's a craftsman. And you shot me a message. And I said, hey, man, one of these days I'll go by there and cruise by and see this cat. So I showed up, and that was when the guy for Cruz Pedregon was out there doing some welding on a hitch.
Yep.
And finally you rolled up. So here we are.
And here we are.
Tell me about this shop, man, and how long you've been building trucks, because this is what you do. Now, when you get on your Facebook page or your Instagram, it kind of says like a body shop. But, dude, you're a custom fabricator, and you're building this badass, what is this, a
C50? 1970 crew cab C50.
But it started off as a three-door Suburban.
Yeah.
So what was let's talk about the shop first, because we started talking about how you got into this and how you got trained up.
We'll
because
go.
I'm one of those, oh, I want you to go off, because I want to stop talking. My fans have already heard all my mechanical failures. My first car was a 71 Formula Firebird with a 455, but the 455 was yanked out of it, and it had a Jerry Rig 396 in it, kind of sitting crossways. Cross member was sideways, and it was the coolest car in South Texas when it ran. Luckily, I had an older brother, Scott, who would work on that thing and keep it on the road. Krager Super Sports on all four corners. But I've always been a car and truck fan. So how did you become such a gearhead and fabricator and your passion for automobiles?
Well, all the passion comes from this man sitting next to me here.
That's why I wanted him here, because he's trying to buy my Corvette from me. I think we're close, Butch.
We've always had hot rods, always had hot boats, and you know, everything had a blower in it growing up. So everything had to be fast. Everything had to be hot and stuff like that. So growing up, it was, you know, anytime the boat would leave the garage, anytime a truck would leave the garage, it was, I'm going with you. We're going. I'm there.
Now, when you guys were out there boating, and these are basically flat bottoms, right?
Yeah.
And aluminum, I mean, a fiberglass hull.
Yep.
How long are these boats? 16, 18 feet?
18 foot.
What kind of motors are you running these things?
Chevys. Big block Chevys.
How many horsepower?
The one on alcohol, depending how you tuned it, anywhere from 1,300 to about 2,200.
How fast are you guys going out there?
That boat actually did one time. We did run it. We didn't know what the tune-up on it was, so we mechanic said he didn't make it to the racetrack. He said, "Well, just run the Bakersfield tune-up in that thing." And so we did, and I think Travis, what were you, about 14 then?
Well, 13, 14.
He used to launch me all the time.
What do you mean by that?
Well, take me down to the boat ramp and, launch me and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he'd go around at the finish line and pick me up and stuff. And that's how I could always tell if I won or lost a race, because he was happy when I won. And if he'd give me the sad look if I red lit or broke
out. I'd be moping on the trailer.
So anyway, we took the boat down there. It was like a test and tune-up weekend. We had 3 days. And we just had a new friend of mine build the motor, because he says, "Let me build it this time," because we tore it down about every 3 races and stuff like that. And I got the motor back, and actually I fired it up, and I looked at him and my son. I says, "This thing's not making any power. The boat's not shaking off the trailer, or, just a little bit calmer and stuff." And so I figured, well, it's not going to run that good, so I'm not expecting nothing. So I ran that first one for test and tune, and they come to put me on the trailer. Because anytime you ran more faster than the 750, you had to have a capsule. And I didn't have a capsule on the boat and stuff. So we run a 722.
Like, now, what do you want to run? When you say 722 or 750,
ET, like lap time.
Quarter mile.
Okay.
Quarter mile. The real quarter mile.
This was when they were running the real quarter mile.
Yeah.
Or the full quarter mile.
Yeah.
Right. Are they only running eighth on water too?
I think
now
they switched to eighth now, didn't they?
Yeah, they're 1,000 feet now.
Yeah, it's crazy how everything has changed. We
just
did
faster.
On my show, I was racing Gabriel Iglesias, and I was surprised. Yeah. I knew that I figured it's going to be an eighth-mile track. I was like, "Man, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What can you do on this thing?" Butch, question for you before I want to get back to Travis and the creation of this shop, but the passion and it all comes from you. It starts with you. You're 71, correct? 72. I'm in a ballpark. Like, what were the hot cars that you were driving back in the day? What'd you cut your teeth in?
Well, when I got out of Vietnam, I saved enough money over to buy a brand new Corvette. It was a 66,
yeah.
427, 435, which they didn't handle.
Right.
They were fast, but scary, So if you really wanted to go fast without being scared, you had to do a lot of suspension work and stuff like that. And I wrecked a few of them, so... Started learning how to do the body work so I could start putting them back together and stuff, and suspension work, and kind of started with the Corvettes, and then got into boating because I got too many tickets. And the insurance was too high.
Hey, but when you were doing all this back in the day, the other day when we were speaking, you were talking about Van Nuys. And running through,
Van Nuys Boulevard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Running. And that was when it was the scene, right?
Running from the cops. Right.
25,000 miles on the car on Van Nuys Boulevard.
buying, seeing the cops sitting at dinner, buying their dinner every night to make sure they take care of you later on.
Yeah, I did that.
You have a Corvette right now and a 69 Camaro that's really hot. And this truck, we'll get to that truck here in a little bit, but your Corvette is a 64?
64.
And that motor is what?
It's a 427. It's actually a 68 427. I used to have it in my day cruiser with a blower on it. When I sold the boat, I knew the motor was worth a lot of money because it was 68, and the guys were looking for them to do clones and stuff like that. So I took the motor out because I figured I'm going to buy an old Corvette again and make it like I used to have when I, when I got out of the service and stuff, because the flared fenders and lowered and stuff like that. So we had to do a few things to it because it was set up for a blower, so we relieved the heads and stuff. So went ahead and put the aluminum heads on it, and it's got 11-to-1s in it and everything. It put on the dyno about 550 horses.
So, but dude, I was thinking that you're a body guy. So now you're talking about you're doing suspensions and you're doing motors. Do you know it all?
No, I do all. I let him do all the suspension work. Yeah.
Okay, but you'll still do some paint work,
cement work,
paint work.
Oh no, well, a little bit here and there. I'm kind of.
He gets sucked into my projects.
How did you teach yourself to do that? Because I got a 74 Z28 Camaro right now that I desperately want painted. But as I tell Travis, because I'm such a tightwad, I don't want to come off. Do you think I could sand that thing down and put a successful paint job on it? Or should I take it to a professional? You did it.
I think I'd turn professional because, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a paint job. And even the prep work is the most important stuff.
And that's what I'm hearing. But it's funny because, like, when you're thinking about paint, and you and me have been talking about this because I was looking for you to school me up. because you've hung around so many of these guys that do this. It's like, hey, man, you know, a lot of guys will tell you about this paint job and they'll either have your car forever or, you know, whatever they charge you, you know, they might have charged you for it, but the work might be half that or the work and all the parts is really worth about half. So, man, it's kind of like that's a weird area to go into. And so I was trying to arm myself with as much information as I could. So I don't want to get gypped.
Yeah. Paintwork's a tough one.
Yeah. It is.
Painters are tough, and then find somebody who does good quality work. And like he was saying, the prep work is where it's all at. Prep work is, if your prep work isn't good, the paint job, it doesn't matter how good you lay it down, it's not going to look good.
Well, let's talk for a second about this truck behind us, the C50, which when you found this Suburban in a lot or a yard?
A yard, somebody's yard.
And what year was that?
70 Suburban.
And when the 70 Suburban is actually a three-door.
Yep.
And so you had to fabricate that other, well, it'd yep. be the
build
door
the
behind
whole
the passenger, yep. the door behind the driver's side.
Yeah, because Chevrolet didn't do it that year. That, from what I heard, they were trying to cut budgets that year, or those years, and trying to pull back some, you know, costs of these trucks. And they figured the best way to do that is get rid of that door so people don't get out into traffic.
Well, what were you thinking when you saw that? Because when I see those three-door Suburbans, when I used to film my show, Broken Skull Challenges, one out there just salvage. And it's like, hey, man, that'd be cool to fix up. I never thought about adding another door. But there could have been an easier route, seemingly. What possessed you to make this build? Because it's like, man, this truck is how long?
We're going to be 28 feet overall, or 27 feet overall length with the flatbed car hauler deck.
So it's a C50 flatbed car hauler deck, and it's a Duramax diesel.
Duramax diesel in it, Allison transmission, the whole deal.
So, but dude, why? Hey, you picked the hardest project you could do.
Well, I keep asking him that. Why? It's like, like a money pit.
I'm looking for the easiest way possible, Travis.
Well, just like we have a shop now. It's all because of my wife, Amber. She's the one that kind of threw the wrench in the plan. And so the whole truck started off as I bought a C50. I have one in the backfield sitting there. Truck still complete, but it's been sitting back. We bought it, and me and my buddy Jeremy Colcart, we were like, you know what, let's make this drive. Let's make a shop truck out of it. Another friend of mine in Iowa, Craig at River City Hot Rods, he calls me and says, I got a motor for you. So he's like, I got a Duramax sitting here. He's like, you need it. I'm like, oh, geez.
Then I love when a buddy says you need something.
then it turns into, oh, hey, yeah, I'm just gonna ship it to you. Because you need to, this, then it turns, you know, start talking to the companies that deal with AccuWare and all them. And, you know, we're like, what if we take it to SEMA? You know, just a standard cab. So then my wife gets involved. She's like, you know, if you're doing this, she's like, you're really not going to go all the way and make it a crew cab? So you're going to chicken out, huh? I'm like, geez. So I talk.
I got to jump in here, man, because I've been married. I've been with my wife 15 years. We've been married 9. And, dude, it's very rare to find a woman that will say, hey, don't half-ass this thing. Don't be a chicken. Go full bore.
Yeah, don't be chicken shit.
Yeah. So keep going.
Well, that's what his mom was like.
Yeah.
She really didn't push me. She always just said, do what you want.
And that's cool. Oh, that's real cool.
I mean, she was supportive of everything.
Yeah.
Everything. So just like Amber. Amber is always just, you know, with this truck, it was, hey, here you go. You're doing a crew cab now. So I'm like, so I call another friend of mine, Brandon Sisko, talking to him about it. Well, Brandon, you've done a couple of these. What are we looking at? He's like, you got this, dude. He's all, I'll help you out with some parts and get you and steer you in the right direction. And so next thing you know, he's like, but you got it. You need a Suburban. He's like, the only way you're going to pull this off is finding a Suburban first to help with your time frame. He's like, you can build it from scratch, but start with a Suburban. So the next day I knew where one was sitting. So I roll up on, I go pull up and the guy had me pulling his driveway and I'm like, hey man, you want to sell that Suburban? He's like, I just sold it. I'm like, oh, of course. So I'm like, well, the guy changed his mind. Give me a call. A couple of hours later. Hey man, guy backed out. You want it? Went and picked it up that day. By that end of that week, that thing was cut in half. And
well, and if you want to see, because there's pictures of this on your Facebook and on your Instagram account. On Instagram, you are
CTP Concepts.
Okay, so I follow you. So I've been looking at all this stuff. So, but when you decide to put this thing together, I get the cab part, but what made you decide to do a flatbed car hauler?
Something different. Something that you could take your other hot rods. It started off as a shop truck. Like, let's make a tow rig out of this thing. You know, let's have a cool tow rig. We can go pick up old cars. And say you're picking up a customer's car, you want to pull up in something nice. You're like, well, let's do something old, but with all the new powertrain in it, but have it where we can load up nice cars and take them to car shows. And because this thing lays out, so now you don't have to take your car off to pull it into the car show. You pull everything in one shot and lay everything out.
Man, when you start cutting into a car, like, what was the first car or truck you cut up? Because, man, I'm just thinking, you know,
that one out there, that white one.
And there's a lot of history behind that, because what's that, one low sled?
The one low sled.
One low sled, and that is a 68 or 70?
1970 short bed.
So, 1970 short bed, and how'd you come upon that thing?
So when I was 15, 14, you know, my dad, he always said, he's like, he told me and my sister, either I'll co-sign on a brand new vehicle for you, or let's find it. You want an old truck, we'll do an old truck. So at the time, which we still have the truck, he has a 72 Custom Camper Special that he had as his work truck. And, you know, he's like, well, you want a little 72 short bed? And I was like, well, yeah, let's build one. So we found one, $900. Plumber owned it. Looked like he loaded the truck from about 30 feet away. You know, dents, dings all down it. And so that's where he, you know, he really taught me a lot how to do paint and body work back then. And how to get them straight, what you have to do. And so we had it. By the time I was 16, that was a nice little truck.
Mm-hmm.
All yellow, just nice static drop, nice, you know, the old Anson jelly bean style wheels, I call them, on it. And so I was 16 years old driving that around.
Yeah, well, the first day we went to school,
day.
Got somebody backed into it.
left-hand turn coming home.
Oh, I thought somebody backed into it.
That might be a story mom didn't tell you.
I heard the story that you had a date.
And no, first, that was a different one.
First time you had a girl in the front seat with him, and you rear-ended two old ladies.
That was the second accident with it. So this truck's been through a few accidents.
Tell them about the paint jobs and the insurance companies.
Yeah, but the paint job on that thing is interesting because a lot of it's bare metal, and it looks like it's got, you know, a couple of layers of stuff that have been sanded through. So, I mean, it's a beautiful truck.
It looks like a jawbreaker.
Well, but yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. But if you don't understand it, you won't get it. But if you know what you're looking at, it's badass.
There's a lot of history on the paint on that thing. 'Cause it went from his original paint job, which was I think it was PPG Dandelion Yellow. And he had some pearl in there and beautiful little truck. So first.
Nice. It was all painted and
super clean. I mean, being 16 years old, you have. Yeah. And this was in 1996, 97, 96, I think, driving this hot little, you know, super clean little short bed, which they weren't big back then. They weren't the hot truck to have back then. And, you know, pulling the high school parking lot with a bright yellow little truck. And first week driving it, coming home, I'd have my grades high enough. So finally got my grades high enough to be able to drive the truck. First week coming home, a kid did a left-hand turn in front of me. Took the whole front end right off of it. He's like, I didn't see you coming. I'm all,
oh.
I'm like, it's bright yellow. You miss me. And that's when it turned into the kind of same deal with him, wrecking all his Corvettes, and he just had to learn how to fix them.
I finally told him, you know, because when he went across the railroad tracks, laid low, and took the cross member out, and did some other damage to the front, I says, you're on your own now. You got to learn how to fix this thing, because I'm not fixing it anymore.
You know, when you talked about those crashes, I've been hitting head with so many steel chairs, I forgot. I'd sold that 71 Formula Firebird, and I had bought my uncle's 73 Camaro at 354 speed. And I just got it literally probably 6 months ago, and I was turning left to go into our house. And my buddy, and his dad was the family, was the town veterinarian, Dr. Bitters. Russell Bitter, I'll never forget it. I know you don't listen to the podcast. Blew through the yield stop sign and T-boned me, or hit me in about my ass end, spun me out. And my front tires actually ended up on the front sidewalk in our yard to add insult to injury. And there was a lot of bitters. He was driving. He was about 16, 17 years old. All of his brothers and sisters in there. And I get out and slam my door. Dude, this is my 73 Camaro, which it was like brand new, 70,000 miles. I like, GD, what in the hell is wrong with this? I said, did you not see me coming? And so I had all this rear end, you know, damage to my left rear quarters. And I was like beside myself. And I wasn't worried about anybody in the Suburban. I was worried about my precious 73 Camaro that I just bought. But I never learned the bodywork stuff. So when your dad says you got to learn all this stuff, what kind of student were you?
I was average. I was average.
Somebody begs to differ.
Wait. All I heard, he spent his time in school drawing pictures of trucks.
And you know, you know who's to blame for that? Because I'd sit there copy him at the kitchen table all night long, drawing trucks and boats.
So how do you end up picking up all the skills and teaching yourself this? Because like everybody I've told us, I'm really good at tearing things up, just building stuff and fabricating it. It's a different language for me.
It just, you kind of just get in that situation. And luckily, I've had him growing up, you know, going boat racing. It would be, you know, taking the motors apart, pulling the motors out of boats and all that kind of stuff growing up a lot. That gave me the skill to go, okay, I know how to pull a motor apart. Or I know how to pull parts off. I know how to do this. I know how to put it back in, you know, and at the races, we'd have to, you know, every pass, we have to go through the whole boat, check everything. So I was always, anytime that boat, in drag races, it was school, pull them out of school. We're going racing.
No, I think I left you home one time because the grades weren't great.
You might have.
The one that taught Jello that one time.
He might have.
Hey, now that I've been in the area for about a year and a half, like when you guys are talking about going out and doing stuff, we're talking about lakes. I grew up down there in the Gulf of Mexico in South Texas. So, like, what lakes are y'all going to race these boats?
Well, they used to have about 12 places like Firebird, Castaic, Chowchilla, Red Bluff, you know, all of, but they don't have them anymore.
A lot of California stuff, and then you had your couple of Phoenix.
Well, a lot of those ones in California now, I mean, you've got to go through so many checks just to, to get anything in the water.
Yeah, they don't let you put your boat in any water anymore.
Yeah. Like, I got a jet ski. It's been sitting in my shop forever. I heard it's a real pain in the neck to try to get on Tahoe.
Don't try and go on Tahoe.
Dude, I just want to go out there.
Topaz now, too.
Is it hard to get in Topaz?
That's what I heard.
That's where I wanted to go, just because I can't get lost on Topaz.
Kind of hard.
Hey.
If you do.
Hey, man. You're right.
We have other problems.
I was
You're really drunk.
You have one too many.
What's wrong with this guy? Can he not see us? So anyway, we was filming. I did a show called Redneck Island. We used to film it at Lake Hartwell, Georgia, way, you know, a few years ago. Man, when I was living in Atlanta, we used to pass over Lake Hartwell going into South Carolina all the time. And all these years later, we're filming a show out there. So I've got a Kawasaki 310 LX out there. That's 310, 1500cc supercharged motor. And, man, I'm out there. That lake is 53,000 acres. So, man, I was out there and started running a little bit low on fumes. And I got the radio blasting. It has a great sound system on it. And I just said, hey, man, you know, when you're out there just kind of bobbing on the surface of the water, things look different. So I called my buddy. I said, hey, dude, I'm kind of lost out here in Lake Hartwell. I said, can you help a brother out? He goes, well, what buoy are you by? So I started up and went to a buoy, and he kind of gave me, you know, when you look at the map from an aerial and you see the fingers, and the fingers are very, you know, very distinguished. But when you get out there, you can't see crap.
See it.
So anyway, I don't know how I'm spinning this ending. I'm talking about lakes, but that's my getting lost on Lake Hartwell. And when I took that jet ski out there to Marina Del Rey, where I live now, trying to get out here more, and I only rode it a couple times out there, because when you go out there, you're just bobbing around like a cork, because there ain't no piers that you can just pull up to. You just can't pull up on the beach because it's illegal. And you kind of look like a buffoon if you get lost out there and you got to cruise up to Venice Beach. You're like a real loser. So, but when did you stop boating?
Kind of when I moved up here. We used to have a house down in Bullhead on, you know, along the river down there and stuff. Well, we'd always, every summer, 2 weeks vacation up at Shasta or Lake Powell on the houseboats and stuff. But when I moved up here, it was just too much distance and stuff. Then I started getting back into the cars again.
Why did you end up coming out here to Nevada? Okay, I got you.
Well, it was like going to partners with our four guys on a business. Okay. And over the period of time, the other guys couldn't hang in the business financially and stuff. So I stuck it out and everything worked out good.
Hey, when you were over Vietnam, what branch of service were you with?
The Marine Corps.
When you were with the Marines, did they teach you a certain skill or trade, or what did you learn there?
Well, they give you a trade. Like, I was kind of involved with artillery and stuff, observer and, fire direction controls. And, you have what they call MOS, and that's your job. Either you're a grunt or you're artillery. There's a lot of different occupations and stuff.
But doing something like that then wouldn't transfer so much to free enterprise, would it? Or unless you went to...
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe hunting.
Hunting, extreme hunting. I'm talking a lot of helicopter mechanics and stuff like that.
They do, but yeah. I don't see too many artillery pieces out here.
Yeah, but I mean, someone that goes in service, you can come out with a trade that can apply to a regular job. And like when I got out of the wrestling business, I had to tell everybody, hey, man, bouncing around and hitting the ropes in a 20x20 squared circle don't teach you much about anything else in life. So,
well, I was taught. I worked for a contractor when I was 14 and 15 and stuff because my dad just said, you're not laying around the summers anymore. So he had a friend that went to our church, and he says, you're going to start working for that guy. Yeah, I started off at 75 cents an hour.
I remember those days well.
Plus at 75 cents an hour, and my paycheck was $60, $70 a week. You know how many hours we worked.
Yeah.
Which it worked out good. I mean, I worked two summers, and when I was in 11th grade, I bought a nice 1956 Chevy Bel Air, all insurance. My dad says you can't buy the car unless you have enough money for the car and the insurance for 1 year.
That's where I got lucky because my dad was an insurance man. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, man, you got to buy your own car. And I was working for summer jobs, whether it's working for a lease crew, doing oil field cleanup or hauling hay.
Yeah.
We all had to buy our own car. But because I'm in insurance business, I'll get your insurance. So that was our little caveat to having a dad that was in insurance business. But back to this damn build and back to where we were.
Same thing. He made me buy. We bought our own cars.
Yeah.
I worked at a jet ski shop. Water Sports for, I was 12, 13 years old.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Just doing services. And the guy who owned the shop I blew up my jet ski 1 year at the river.
He was good on a jet ski, though, I got to say. I bought a couple jet skis for, $600?
Blew one up on the river, and so we take it to the shop down there and start hanging around there. It was riding distance for a bike.
He usually hit some rocks. We had to do some fiberglass repairs there at night.
So Paul, he's like, yeah, you want to come down and help out and work? And so I started working there, and every summer we'd work all day, all night doing services on jet skis, and that's what gave me enough money to buy that truck, a little short bed, the first one.
Yep.
And we found that one for $900.
But that thing, tell me about this, because a lot of the stuff that you run is bagged. Now, here's the thing. Because I'm from South Texas, pretty much everything that I've ever owned has been four-wheel drive stuff just because we got mud and when we was going back and forth to the ranch.
Oh, we got a four-wheel drive truck to talk to you about.
Oh, I know. I've seen it. I've seen it. But my point is, I was over talking to my buddy, C.T. Fletcher, there in Long Beach one time, and he had a 66 Chevy sitting out there in his parking lot. C.T.'s a big car guy. He loves his Corvettes. And C.T.'s real popular on YouTube. And real motivational, really cool guy. And, it's two-wheel drive pickup. It was even lower in the front now, back then than it is now, because I had it kind of back to stock settings. And just one day, just because it's such a cool pickup, and way back in the day when I was in Atlanta, I had a 65 Ford step side, six-cylinder, three-speed on the column, and a 66, I call them bump sides, I call them fleet sides, short bed, six-cylinder, three-speed on the column. And when I got fired from WCW and moved back to Texas, hell, I didn't have the wherewithal, the financial means to keep those trucks. I ended up selling them. And I was the second owner of that 65. And it was a cherry of a truck. And so I've always missed it. But those were basically only two-wheel drive trucks I've ever had, other than a 70 GMC. And I've been a four-wheel drive guy. When I saw that truck at CT's, I said, man, CT, what are you going to do with that truck? And I caught him on the right day at the right time. And we made up a deal, and I got the truck. I bought it from him. And then that's when I kind of started following you. And I started seeing all this low stuff. And after never being really into low stuff, after getting that truck and then starting to see all the stuff that I started following on Instagram and all the AccuAir, the ride tech or ride suspension stuff, and just getting low, especially with the truck out there, the one low sled, I really started getting into it. when did it become so popular over here, and how'd you get into it? So or were you always into low?
We've always been into lowered stuff. He's had lowered dualies, stuff like that. And then a real good friend of mine, which we call, he's considered part of the family, Bobby. He starts coming around, and next he had a little S10, and everything was make it lower, make it lower, make it lower. And that's when I started making my truck lower. And then out of high school, or actually my senior in high school, I had it on airbags. Had the truck laid out, 17-inch wheels. Back then, no one really had airbags on trucks. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big thing back then. And then I got into a car club, Down to Earth. That's when everything just went downhill. Once I got Down to Earth, it was, well, how do we make this lower? Well, let's chop it. Let's take it to the doors. And our club is always about who is lower, who's got the lowest trucks out there. So it was, well, let's keep cutting. There's one that's sitting a little lower than you. Well, we got a sawzall. Let's cut this one lower. And I worked at a shop, IF Customs. And Carrie at IF Customs really taught me how to weld and get into the fabrication side. You know, between my dad, another friend of ours, Mark, you know, he kind of taught, you know, Mark helped keep the truck kind of on the road since he was living up here. You know, Mark was, we got to do spark plugs. We got this, we got that. Just keep this thing driving enough to get me to school and back. Then after, you know, kind of when I started working for Carrie, it turned into a lot more of the building aspect, the cutting, the metal.
Chopping the roofs.
The roofs and not being scared, going, well, it's only metal. You can weld it back together.
I think that was where you're, that's almost the pioneer of the real low trucks came from that shop.
That we had the lowest of the low sectioning trucks. And aside from the old guys like Barris and some of the pioneers back in the 50s, those guys are the ones that kind of showed us going, well, you can cut these things in half and put them back together. You know, so you take the old 50s style and now you're just applying it to the new trucks or newer trucks.
There's some terminology. There's wrestling terminology that I always use in some of my life. But in this industry, like sectioning, I've been here for several visits with you. And you'll always throw out a word. I'm like, hey, man, what is that? So what is sectioning?
So sectioning a truck is literally cutting the truck horizontally in half. So you're going to take, say you want the roof height, everything to come down, say 2 inches, 3 inches. You'll literally sit there and cut 2 inches out of the side of the truck. Say there's a body line in there. You can remove that body line, and then you can actually get the truck lower. A guy over in Oroville, Bob Grant, good friend of mine, He is the master. This guy is a really good sheet metal guy. And
so that's sectioning, and then chopping would be just the roof.
Yeah, just bringing the roof down.
See, dude, I didn't get it. I totally understand it now.
Yeah, it's just to get them lower. And it changes the whole look of the truck.
Absolutely.
You know, like my truck out there, we took the rockers off. So the bottom, right below the door, there's 3 inches.
So is that considered a section?
No, that's considered taking to the doors.
Okay.
So that was what we were doing back in early 2000s with a lot of these trucks at IF. We'd take them to the doors just to gain that extra 3 inches. So when you park my truck next to another one that's laying, same, you know, laid on the ground, my truck's about 5.5 inches lower.
Dude, your car's lower than my Corvette.
And the reason why mine's lower like that is because of Bob Grant, because he had one. Back then we had competition. And
hey, how does that truck go down the road just as far as handling? I mean, like the bag stuff, like what does it do as far as how the ride is? Because I still hadn't ridden in that thing.
With my truck's set up with a 2-link rear suspension, so it handles. I mean, you could take that thing through the canyons really on it. And then you have newer style suspension, which, you know, we use different companies, chop and block, you know, GSI. We have different stuff that you can use to, you know, they have kits to make it easier now. So you can do these bolt-in kits with 4 links and sway bars.
Dude, what's the difference between a 2-link and a 4-link? Because I hear this stuff all the time. I don't get it.
2-link is literally you have 2 bars and they're bolted to the rear end.
Okay.
4-link, you're going to have 4 bars. And you can do a triangulated. You can do, you know, Panhard bar. You can do a parallel 4-link. There's so many different ways you can do them. And then where you put the bags is where you make the ride. That's where you're going to ride good, is where the bag placement on the rear bars. A lot of guys put them over the axle. It rides really stiff, kind of rides stiff back there, you know, but it works good.
Yeah, but let me ask you something. My 74 Camaro is basically a stock vehicle other than the motor. And, man, I might have almost 4 inches of clearance kind of under that front cross member or whatever you call that right underneath the motor. does it not bother you when you're dragging, you know, on pavement, or are you raising up? Tell me about riding one of these things, dude. Well, the mentality.
With driving these things, the cool part about it is you can go up and down. So my truck gets probably about 10 inches of lift.
Okay.
So you have a good 10 inches in there that if you see something coming, and now too with all the AccuWear stuff that we use, you know, they have everything's computer controlled. They have the computer that you can set your ride height, so you have a 3-level setting, so you hit the button, it has ride sensors on all 4 corners. So this thing will actually respond going through corners as well. It'll lift up. And if it senses a corner is getting higher, it's going to pick it up and level the truck back out.
Okay, so where's the compressor to make all this happen?
With the AccuWear, we run the Endo CVT tank, which has the compressor inside of it, valves are inside of it. They've simplified all this stuff now. Everything is just, it's way easier from back in the day where we're going, we have these valves that are used for flowing fluid through who knows what.
Right.
We've converted, we use them for air, and then you're running these compressors, and my truck has a different setup. I have a belt driven compressor, engine driven on it, but it just depends on, back in the day we didn't have all these options. Now AccuWear's made it super simple. Just here's your tank, throw it in, and your tank has valves, compressors, everything inside of it, and you got wires to hook up and sensors to run, and then you run a good bag on there, and It's a pretty self-explanatory deal. You just get in and drive.
Okay, here's a question, and I'm not asking to get a price from you. I'm just saying, because we're talking about trucks, you've seen my 66.
Oh, yeah.
If I brought it in here and say, hey, man, I'm going to get this thing bagged, what was just a ballpark entry-level bag job on that thing be?
Man, it depends on how we do it. There's so many different options that we could go down. We could keep the stock front suspension. We could change it. We could do, we can order a whole frame from one of these guys where it's a full rolling chassis built for these trucks, which are just, they're beautiful chassis. There's a few guys building them, and we could go that route. It could go anywhere from your basic, hey man, we could get this thing on the ground for, 8 to 10 to we could do $100,000 build real quick.
Okay. But just to throw a real basic system on there, dude,
you're probably looking 10 to 15 in that ballpark.
God,
keeping simple stuff. And we could probably do, depends on what we use, stuff like that. The AccuWear stuff, I kind of highly recommend all that stuff for guys who have never had airbags before.
Now, you built that truck, what, 20 years ago? I mean, you've left it basically the same as when you built it back in, right?
In 2000.
So will you ever upgrade it?
Eventually. It's going to get passed on to the boy.
Gotcha.
The next generation.
Well, that's interesting to see because, on your IG page, I saw your son out there with a spray bottle. And he's
wiping
it down. And I know, you got your passion from your dad, so you're going to hand it down to him.
Yeah, I got, he embedded it into me, and then growing up, it's just, now we're building cars together, and I bring my dad in here to help. He helped a lot on body work on the C50, the night train. And, we had other guys come down and help do body work. And we end up spraying it ourselves, everything, and built the whole truck here. So, and he gets drug into all of it now. As much as he probably says he's retired.
He seems like, but you seem like you're pretty willing person to join in on this. Or you can tap out at any. You seem pretty...
Well, he's my boy.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
It's like him passing it on to TJ, his son. That kid's a real gearhead already.
Yeah.
He loves it. He's not a little girly boy. He likes to tear things apart and put it back together, too. That's what's good.
All right, all you pro wrestling fans, listen up. A fellow WWE Hall of Famer and one of the greatest to ever step between the ropes, Jerry the King Lawler, is coming to Podcast One with the Jerry Lawler Show. Join the King and his co-host, Sean Reedy, as they get together to reflect on Jerry's legendary career. From Memphis to the WWE to just about everywhere else, Jerry will share his thoughts on the current wrestling product and might even have a few guests stop by. Download new episodes of the Jerry Lawler Show every Friday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. And if you love the show, tell your friends and leave a rating and review. That would be badass.
The Steve Austin Show.
Hey, what's this four-wheel drive truck you're talking about?
We haven't told you about this one.
We haven't told you about it.
I've seen a picture of it.
No, you haven't seen this one yet.
You haven't seen this one.
What?
We have secrets. We have our secret stash, man. We can't reveal everything to you.
Well, okay. since you got a ranch up here now, how many acres you got on your ranch up here?
This is a very small ranch.
So it's like a 21. Yeah. Well, we figured you needed a nice four wheel drive to go get hay and stuff like that.
Oh, so what is it?
It's a 68 four wheel drive.
Three quarter ton.
It's all repainted. Nice blue on it. Nice little truck. Needs to be put back together still.
Well, where's it at?
Sitting down at his house.
My house.
Okay. We haven't shown you the secret stash yet.
There's a couple of secret stashes over here he has told me about. Of course, I won't divulge on the airwaves here, but y'all got some real interesting dealings here.
When you build trucks, you gotta mark where you remember seeing certain trucks, and you're like, oh, I know where that one's at. But that's how I found the Suburban. It was, I knew exactly where one was, and I kept my eye on it. Every now and then I'd drive by it and go, okay, it's still there. And, you know, you just kind of keep tabs on certain trucks. And you know where they're at. You know where they're sitting. So when you get a customer, you get somebody, you're like, oh, man, I'm looking for this. Oh, hey, I know where one's at.
Yeah, but it's always interesting when, you know, like when you're approaching someone on a property. Yeah, I know a lot of these guys around here know you guys because you've been around so long and building these things. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, when I bought that 71 Firebird Formula, you know, I saw it every single day. In a little town I grew up in, it was called Edna. It was a town of 5,000 people. And my first car, you know, there's kind of two options. My grandmother wanted to sell her Subaru. It was like a two-door Subaru.
I can see you in that.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Pretty cute.
Man, I'm 15 years old, and, you know, I'm in baseball, football, the whole nine. And all of a sudden, I'm driving back and forth, and this guy's always out there, you know, washing or working on this Firebird Formula. And I said, man, that would be a great first car for me. Mm-hmm. And I told my parents about it, and they said, well, you can pick between that and your grandmother's Subaru. We think you ought to go to Subaru, but it's up to you.
Yeah.
So I approach this guy, and I go into his yard. You know, he's an older dude, man. And I was just a 15-year-old kid, and I was like, hey, man, you know, my name is Steve. You want to sell that car? And that was how I purchased my first car. And it wasn't a whole lot of haggling, but I got it right. So how'd you go through the car buying business? Because that's always an interesting thing to do when you throw out a number or try to start going back and forth with somebody.
Well, you never give them what they want.
No, nope, you can't. That's why I'm willing to work with you. It's an art, though.
There's always a nerve-wracking time when you're walking, especially when there's not a for sale sign. For sale sign, it's wide open, fair game. You walk up to the door, and it's the ones where you walk up on these houses, and you're looking at the house going, whew.
Well, it's like
you're going, should I bring friends with me today, or am I going to do this by
myself? Is
there
a dog?
Yeah. Well, it's like that Suburban you bought. I was doing a grading job for a guy up the road there. And I said, there was a Suburban sitting in this guy's yard up in TRE. And that's the one you bought, wasn't it?
No. That was a different one.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Another one.
I know what you're talking about. There's markets to be had over there.
Which was that?
Oh, TRE.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, talk about the buying process. Or, you know, like you walk up to somebody's yard. Some of these things kind of overgrown with weeds.
Yeah, you just...
You never know what's
up.
You
don't know. It depends on how far out you go, too. Sometimes... I stopped in. There was a little black short bed I saw sitting. I'm driving down the highway. I'm like, you know what? And the wife's with me. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to go ask about that truck. It's a little short bed. I'm like, 68. Looks to be original paint truck. I'm like, I'm going to go ask. So she's like, you're really going to go knock? I'm like, yeah. Well, it's, you know, just smile and wave and, you know.
Well, you got away with people.
So you walk up and knock on the door and lady comes to the door. And I'm like, hey, I saw that old truck out there. You guys interested in selling it? She looks at me, she's like, well, I talked to my husband on that one. He's sitting there eating dinner. He's like, well, come on in. I'm like, so I go in, door shuts. My wife's still sitting in the Suburban out with
he
her
has
boy.
Dinner with him.
I'm sitting there. They're offering me dinner, and I'm just like, no. I got the wife. I'm just trying to ask about your truck. And he's like, oh, I'm my honor. Let's go out and take a look at it. And we go walk around, and that's most of the experiences you get is people just, oh, yeah, or they're like, oh, I'm going to. The one you get a lot is, and I have some old guys that we deal with down the road, and they have fields of cars and trucks, and there's a Chevelle sitting down there. I'm like, well, come on, guys. You want to sell that Chevelle? No. Can't sell it. Why not? I mean, mind you, this car is sitting in a field.
Yeah.
There are cattle's walking around it. Horses are eating off the back of it.
Trees growing out.
Trees growing, you know. But it's a SS car, matching numbers. Everything. They probably bought the thing brand new. And he's like, oh no, what if I sell it to you? Then I won't have it. And then what if I want to fix it up one day? I'm like, you're never fixing this car up. I'm like, let's be real here, guys. Well, I might. I'm like, but I'll sell you this other one. I'm like, I don't want the other car. But they're good guys down there. They supplied some parts for the C50 here for me.
You guys seem to be Chevy guys. Am I wrong on that?
Oh, no, it's pretty,
I don't know. There's a few Fords I like the 67 Mustangs,
yep.
Fastbacks.
Yeah, love the Fastbacks.
Yeah.
We got a 66 coupe because I stumbled upon one. I wasn't looking for it. My wife's first car was a 64.5 Fastback, so we're Fastback people. But
they can be fixed up really nice.
They can be.
Oh, yeah.
I prefer the pony cars to me are a little bit on the small side.
We might know of a Fastback. Is that one still sitting down there?
No.
Dude, I'd love to do something like a 68 Bullet type car.
Well, the Bullet one's nice, but I like the one with what they call the
you talking about Eleanor?
Fast and Furious.
Oh, the Eleanor.
Oh, yeah. Man, those are a little exquisite for me, man. I just want the basic.
I know a guy that's in the Fastbacks down in L.A.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Cheap?
Jason. The Radiator Shop. Oh, yeah.
Has he got any?
He's got a few.
Oh.
He's got a couple cars stacked.
But you primarily work on Chevys.
Well, it doesn't matter. If you want to do a Ford Mustang like that, he'll build.
We'll do Fords.
No, we're
but talking
about...
most of the
about
guys are Chevys.
Here's one for you. Your buddy was going to show up today. We had three guys on the podcast today. I was like, hey, man, I don't know about four. But your good buddy, I might mispronounce his last name, Jeremy Dassler.
Yeah.
His Instagram account is ColdCartD10. He's got a badass... That's a 68 Chevy.
That's a 68 three-quarter ton.
Three-quarter ton, and it's got a... Dodge Cummins, is that a
12 valve?
Man, that thing sticks out of the hood. It's got a manual throttle valve. Give me the transmission.
I don't know what transmission it is.
Anyway, it's automatic transmission that
and
you ship manually.
A bunch of times, and I probably just forget.
Well, you've ridden it a million times.
Well, yeah.
And, man, he took me for riding that thing. And you talk about a badass truck.
That truck is unreal. It's a fire-breathing dragon.
But here's a question I was going to ask him, but since you know him so well, why did he decide to go if you wanted to go diesel in a... original three-quarter ton Chevy pickup, why didn't he go Duramax? Why did he go 12-valve?
That 12-valve, it needs fuel, air, and that's it.
It's just bulletproof?
Power. It'll run.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't... Those things are bulletproof. You get a ton... That thing has crazy horsepower and torque out of that monster. And they're a lot easier to work on. You know,
dude, he took me for a ride, and we just went out here down the road and back, and I had a smile on my face the entire time. This is the most kick-ass truck I've ever been in.
He and Jeremy, out of all the guys I know, it's impressive what he accomplished with that truck and the time frame. You know, he met me similar, you know, kind of through Instagram and stuff like that. And Jeremy hit me up. He was like, hey buddy, I see you live in my area and I'm into trucks. You're into trucks. Want to be friends? So we immediately hit it off, and he comes here. He helps at the shop here a lot, and he's that guy that's just there for you.
Hey, man, here's a question for you. I got a Dodge, 88 Dodge Ram Charger. Let me see. I think I have 28,000 miles on it. I'm a second owner. A friend of mine was driving down the road one time in South Texas, and he knows I like four-wheel drive stuff. He goes, hey, man. This guy just died. It was part of an estate sale. He had a El Camino, and he had that 88 Ram Charger. And at the time, it had, 26,000 miles, something like that. And he goes, it's for sale. Do you want it? I said, man, what does he want for it? He says, $5,000. Dude, this is original paint, original everything stock. You know, $5,000. I said, see if he'll take 45 for it. He took 4,500 for it.
You should start lower.
No. Dude, you get a fine like that, that vehicle, you know what I get for that thing right now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely original other than the lift, which I fixed to take back down. Here's the question. I know I'd probably be screwing up an original vehicle, but what about putting a Cummins in that?
Oh, I would. It'd be awesome.
That would be beastly.
Yep. Yep. I think that 12, after doing Duramax and the C50 here,
right.
There's a lot more involved. But you wouldn't do a Duramax in that truck anyways, but I would do a 12 valve in that thing in a heartbeat. Or you can get into the newer motors and do a newer diesel swap in it. 24 valve or one of them.
I just wondered when Jeremy did his truck, because it's 3/4 ton, a little bit heavier springs. I mean, with that extra weight up in that front end, I mean, what's the difference going to be?
It's a little bit more weight. His truck weighs a little bit more than my little short bed does. Definitely, you got some more weight to it, but you know, he's still running all, you know, still running all the chopping block front end and everything on that truck, and it handles great, drives great, everything like that. You might have to do a little heavier spring in there, depending on what it does once you put it in.
What do you think about that?
I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'm all about swaps.
Hey, I got this 55 Buick that I got, but I'm not in love with. So I'm thinking about selling it. If you want to buy it, look me up on Instagram. You said you was going to do some renderings of it.
I haven't had a chance to yet. We're going to.
It's such a cool car. It's such an original car. And it's badass, but I just kind of like something that'd go a little bit faster.
We can LS swap that thing and airbag that thing, and then you're fast and low. And
yeah. And then that's going to be about, what, 80? Mm-hmm. And then, but still, it's a cool car, but it's just not the most streamlined thing in the world.
It's a different style.
It's a different style.
It's that 50s kind of sled, in a sense, style. You put them on the ground, they look good.
I was driving home from your shop just the other day. I saw two old guys over there at the intersection, and they were both driving old cars, and one of them was 50-something, the other one was 60, and I'm driving my 55, and I waved at them. You know, hey, we're all driving old cars. They're going to wave back, you know, because normally when I see someone in a cool car, man, I'll go out of my way to roll my window down and give them a thumbs up or something. They didn't see me. I was like, oh, Jesus, I'm trying to give you guys a heads up here. Give you props on the cars.
Wait, notice me.
That was one of the things I was really worried about when we bought this place up in this area, what the car scene was going to be. Man, there's a lot of – this town has a great – along with Reno, but specifically here has a great car and truck scene.
Yeah.
Lots of Corvettes. There's lots of C4s, 5s, 6s, and now the 7s, and then the 8s just dropped. And there's a lot of cool ass trucks, and there's some older cars.
A lot of hot rods up here.
Yeah,
you don't see them during wintertime though.
No.
During summertime, you only see them till like 6 o'clock at night, and then they all go home and tuck them back to bed. Except for me and Jeremy and the owners
yeah. Go to bed at 6 o'clock.
Hey, you just got a '69 Camaro. What, about a year ago? Or how long have you had that?
It's over a year ago.
And a 6-speed transmission. What's the motor in that thing?
LS3. 6.2.
You like that car?
I love that car. I mean, it's just a good driver. It's well-balanced horsepower and the suspension. It's a well-balanced car.
And it looks, to me, it looks like $1 million. It's black, but you guys look at it, it needs to be cut and buffed and all this stuff.
We pick everything apart, yeah. Though.
Dude, that's when I roll up here with my junk. I'm like, God dang, man, these guys are brutal.
You see what I drive?
Y'all got a different level of eyes than I got. So I think the paint on the thing is magnificent.
Well, it'll do. It's a driver.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a way better driver.
It's not a garage queen or nothing. None of my stuff's garage queen.
Yeah.
If I can't drive it, I don't want it.
So you think about going wider with some wheels and tires and that thing?
We're thinking about building a whole new one because I don't really want to tear this car apart because it's too well balanced.
Right.
You know, if we build another one, we'll tub it and we'll put an LT4 in it. 650 horse, 700 horse, but we do the suspension a little bit different to handle it.
And what would you do different? Because you're talking about, I know you have your eyes on one.
Well, yeah, we're talking about it.
Yeah. I ain't saying nothing. So are you thinking about pulling the trigger on that? Would that be the car?
We'd probably sell his car and then start fresh and do a full frame under it. Everything full, either roaster shop or one of the, you know, full rolling chassis. And do it. Then they're four link. You know, this car's four linked. Everything has coilovers, ride tech, suspension under it. Car handles great.
It does.
But once you get in the full frame, it takes away that. Instead of just having the front frame half, then the body, the rest of the frame, it's a full frame underneath the car.
So what's the story about? Okay, like if you were going to tub, okay, let's say you had your 69 out there and you were going to tub that. Are you copacetic with doing that if he chose to do
if
that?
If he wants to do it, I have no problem.
I'm just saying.
Up.
I mean, like if you go in there and cut those inner fender wells out and just build them in.
Build them in, everything, cut them out, cut everything
does
out.
Does anything change with the rear end?
Just we'd go wider tire unless you wanted to change the offset. We'd narrow the rear end. But it wouldn't be a big, like, pro street style tub. It'd be more of just a mini tub to run like a 12-inch wide rear instead of, you know, it's got 10s on there now.
Okay, now what's the deal? I haven't looked under the hood of your truck out there. Those things are tubbed on the front, are they not? Because
mine,
of the way those wheels.
Mine doesn't have tubs in it.
It doesn't.
No, I never did it.
How can you get those wheels in there to get those, to go that
low? You just cut everything out. The wheels are exposed. It's
underneath.
It's exposed. Yeah, underneath the hood. You pop the hood, you see the wheels there. Eventually, I'm doing wheel tubs in that one. I do wheel tubs for the 66 body styles. You know, I have a wheel tub that I kind of came up with that looks. I like everything to look factory, like Chevrolet would have done it.
Right.
I want to look as much. I don't want to look like, oh man, that looks custom. I want people to look at it and go, wait a minute, did Chevy do that or is that custom? That's like with the C50 and the crew cab here. It's added a couple body lines, moved a couple things to put in the right place to make it look as much like Chevrolet did it.
So going back to the C50 here, man, there's air tanks. You got your fuel tank built. The motor's in there, but you haven't cranked that motor up. And I know you were looking to fire that thing up this weekend. So are you sweating here?
A little bit. We got another.
The same as when?
November. My roll-in day is November 2nd. So we got a little bit. Once this, we should be driving it by the end of the week here. Driving the truck, and then it goes down to L.A. And a good friend of mine, Randall, Sunwest Metalworks, he's going to, you know, we're going to build the bed down there and get the bed built. And we're looking in a better position than a lot of guys going to SEMA.
Right.
I know that much. I look through pictures going, ooh, man, they don't even have paint yet.
Yeah, but you know how they always spend the car builder shows, you know, like the clock is always ticking.
Oh, yeah.
But that's
yeah.
television.
They have TV commercial breaks, man. Yeah. They get a lot done in those breaks.
But you've worked in the industry, and from time to time you still do. So
yeah,
understand all
that. Oh, yeah, I know the TV stuff. We do the beer. We do a lot of beer commercials and stuff like that still. So you know it's TV.
But you're trying to build that suspense so that there's,
exactly.
You know.
You have to.
Yeah, it's entertainment.
Otherwise,
factor.
No one's going to watch it.
Yeah, if you got plenty of time and it's all, you know, fun and games and everything's rosy, what's the problem?
Everyone wants the drama. Everyone wants to see the problems. Going, oh, we're never going to make this.
Hey, so what would you say then, and looking at this truck, I mean, if you're not like a hard and fast mechanic, like what's your strong suit? Is it the fabrication?
I would say metalwork. Metalwork's a little bit stronger. It can do everything. The metalwork is more fun because you get to sit
there. But
that's
what you like to specialize in.
Yeah, you get to create. You get to see something come together, and you're just like, you start building it, and you're just like, wow, that's cool. And then you get to that point where it's like, oh, man, you get to see it on the ground. You're like, okay, I'm over it now. But you realize you got to finish the whole project.
Yeah. Hey, I was on your Instagram account. You work on a lot of horse trailers.
A lot of horse trailers around here.
Yeah. What's up with that? And they said, hey, man, this guy can fix anything.
I hang out with a lot of cowboys up here. I was team roping there for a while with Hank Curry and the Curry family and stuff. And once you start team roping, you get into that circle and they kind of really just take care of their own. And, hey, man, I got a trailer that needs a little bit of welding. And Jack, you know, his son, he's a welder too. So he, you know, we bounce stuff back and forth to each other. Somebody needs aluminum work done. It's, you know, aluminum's a lot harder to weld than just the regular steel stuff. So guys, aluminum trailers, these guys, team ropers are hard on their trailers.
Oh, absolutely.
They are not easy on the equipment. They just, as long as it gets their horse out there, that's all they care. They'll tie wire stuff together and go, that's fine. Oh, your truck's barely running. Yeah, that's fine, though. My horse is good, though. I've seen my horse.
I got... Don't take off too fast.
You know, or you get guys like Hank Curry. He stuffs like 15 horses in a 2-horse trailer.
Hey, man, so coming from South Texas, you know, a good friend of mine who's my doctor does a lot of that team roping, and now he's into something else. I forgot what. And he's into cutting horses, too. Why'd you stop roping?
Just life. It takes a lot of time. To be good, yeah. I mean, going up and playing around and stuff like that. And then you got to feed horses. You got this, you got that. So it was just like with life and, you know, we had the baby, stuff like that. And then all the trucks kind of took over. The wife, she's the one who kind of told with the shop. She's like, you know, she's like, you really need to push the shop. She's like, I was working out of the garage and still, you know, pouring concrete on the side and doing that and working, doing stuff out of, you know, the garage. And he's, you know, they're just, she got to the point, she's like, you need to have a shop. So if you're doing this, you need to have a building, you need to have more space, you need to be able to tear these things apart and really do them. So she's a driving force. She really is.
I watched you guys go through the process of building this place on his Facebook or Instagram. So where did you find, how did you find this piece of property and how'd you end up here?
It was a word of mouth, friend of friends going, hey man, I'm looking for a shop. And this one came up and it started off only half the building. And you know, the owner, we know the owners of the landlords and stuff. They're like, we got, you know, gave a pretty good deal on it. And then the guy next door moved out. I'm like, well, how much for that space too? And can I tear down walls? And they're like, do whatever you want to do. So it tore down walls, put beams up and expanded, you know, went bigger.
But, so just the fact that you, you never work on a construction crew. Just the fact that you were a metalhead and a fabricator. I mean, this kind of all crosses over.
Well, I have a dad who, it all comes back.
Did you build houses or were you into construction?
I was a contractor. In Southern California for about 25, 30 years.
So that's what you did?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Mostly masonry, cement. Did a lot of that stamping concrete and matting and stuff. You know, so, yeah. He didn't want to work it.
I was like, I don't want to do cement. I don't want to do contracting.
Mm-hmm. I'd finally take him to the summer. He was 15. Says, you're going to work with me now, you know. And it didn't work.
That's hard work.
But oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that is, cement contracting is, that's no joke.
Yeah.
And making it look right.
Yeah, making it look good. And it's, I worked for a guy up here a little bit years ago. And he actually, the guy I worked for up here, worked for my dad when he was 14. Started when he was 14. So, you know, and Joe up here, he pours concrete. This guy puts down a lot of concrete. Mm-hmm. And every time I get the phone call, he still called me right now. Hey, man, I need an extra guy tomorrow. You want to come out and finish? I'm like, I know you're calling me. And I know there's a reason is you have a lot of mud going down.
Yeah.
Because it's the only reason why you're calling me.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it turns into 60, 70 yards of concrete with four guys, all flat work.
Yeah.
And you're out there on your knees and just troweling it out. And you're looking back on, wow, that's a lot of concrete behind me I still got to go through.
Hey, the truck back here on the stand, green and white. What is that?
1972.
GMC. Man, I've been looking for a GMC. There's something about a GMC I like.
They have a good look.
Yeah. So what are you guys doing to that truck? Because it's a great color scheme.
So that truck started off. He was like, I just want to lower it. I don't want it too low. I just want it lowered, right? So it turned lowered. Then he saw my truck on airbags. Well, that'd be kind of cool. So airbags on. That'd be kind of cool. Now here we are taking it all the way down.
So when will it be completed? I mean, I know the C50 here for SEMA is. Hey, dude, are you gonna have a booth up there for CTP Concepts?
No,
come by
no,
and see it, or like where are you?
It'll be out there with AccuAir.
Okay,
so we got a spot in the AccuAir car corral out front. I don't know.
How'd you build such a relationship with AccuAir?
They're just a great company. You know, it's you come across certain companies that just really, you know, help you, and they want to see you grow because it makes them grow. So they're just that company that they have a thing called the AccuAir family, and it's, you know, they take, you know, it's a tight group.
Right.
You know, and they really, if I have any issues, nothing, it's just, hey man, we'll help you out. What do we need to do?
Gotcha.
So they stand behind you.
So what are you going to do with that truck in? Is that what the plan is?
It's going to slam it.
Slam it.
So we can ride it about an inch off the ground if I want. And we're tubbing it and putting 12-inch tires in the back. It's getting an LS3 motor.
LS3?
Yeah.
It's getting a little bit of an upgrade.
Yeah.
It was outdated.
And you already have the LS3, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was looking at those last night on the computer because of you.
What's that?
I was doing research of things that I could do. I was thinking, okay, if we did a LS to my 66, no, I was thinking about doing an LS6 in a Camaro, but that's got that 383 stroker motor. That's a good motor, so I could put that in a 66. LS to Camaro,
do a nice little suspension on it.
Yeah.
We rim and tire it.
Yeah.
You have a nice little car.
Yeah, maybe like a satin black.
Yep.
Well, I'd say that I would go maybe do a mini tub on that Camaro. Yeah. If you're gonna
really?
Yeah, that's why I don't. So much of it is done to my car already. I don't want to redo it.
Right.
It's like throwing good stuff away.
Yeah.
So that's why we figured we'll start with a whole brand new car.
Gotcha.
You know, maybe just put the full frame. We're discussing full frame or just the, you know, the ride tech suspension. But I'm leaning towards the full frame because you get the wheels and get the brakes. You get the rear end. You get everything.
Where do you get the full frame from?
If you guys doing them, you have a roadster shop. They're kind of, say, top, one of the top ones that I kind of know of is they have their full frames for these cars. I know a couple other companies are coming out. You have Chris Olson Chassis Works. They have some stuff, and you have some other guys.
But you were talking about for instance, my 66.
66?
Oh, this one back here. But just a rolling chassis like that, what's that going to run?
You can get, you're probably with the brakes, they do a big brake kit on it. You get like 12-inch rotors. You can always upgrade to go 13-inch rotors, stuff like that. Rear end, brakes, everything. You're probably looking at about 13 for a rolling chassis. From a chopping block.
Okay.
13, 14, depending on what other stuff. It gets up there once you have sway bars and...
Okay. You know, then just unbolt the body. And unbolt, then, yep. So then what do you do with the old frame?
Sell it.
Short bed frame.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, and... Yeah, you have some other, your GSI out there too. They have a nice frame kit as well, and they're all pretty comparable in the price range. Then you get
that
into
seems
the
like
roadster
way to
shop.
Go.
Roadster shop, you start getting up to $24,000-$25,000 range,
right?
But they do more of the muscle car stuff. You know, the pickup truck stuff. I go with one of these other two guys, and their chassis are nice.
But with something like that, I mean, you wouldn't be afraid to drive cross country in that thing.
Not at all. Mm. Nah, you throw an LS in these things and. It's like driving a brand new truck.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing it to this truck, because I want to drive the heck out of it. Putting AC in it and everything this time, too. So,
man, that's the only thing that I'd like to try to do is get some kind of like concave, like, you know, my seat. You're up there on that steering wheel. I need to shorten that steering column.
Once you sit in this C50 here with those Snowden seats, they give you a little bit more room, a little more concave back, and it's a really nice seat. You can order them already done.
Well, I might do that. When you get this thing out of here, we might be able to talk business. We'll see what happens. But, hey, man, it's been good sitting here shooting the breeze with you. Travis, tell people where they can find you or, man, what all you do. Because I know you don't really put the word out, but you always have trucks in here and you're always working on because you've got a long-standing list of people that you've worked with and they keep coming back for more stuff. But put your stuff out there and talk about where people can find you.
Well, mostly the easiest place is Instagram. Instagram at CTP Concepts on there. That's kind of been the staple. It seems like that's where everybody goes is, you know, Instagram. You don't have to look at all the other stuff. It's just pictures, you know. And but what we do here is basically anything, you know, take on full builds and, you know, all the way down to just upgrade brake systems, stuff like that. You know, doing LS swaps. We have a 65 out there doing a full 6.0 LS swap, computer, you know, transmission, complete. Everything brakes upgrade the whole deal on the truck. So it's pretty well anything and everything. Metalwork, rust repair.
But you will work on cars.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
As well
as
trucks.
Take on cars, everything. Okay. It just seems like the trucks are big right now. The C10s are just, it's just a big scene. And I mean, the C10 club is just massive. And you have a lot of guys.
Man, I got to ask you, I'm famous for trying to wrap things up and then keep going. I've got to ask you about your trip out there to Auburn, California, I guess it was. Was it C10 Intervention?
C10 Intervention.
I was going to try to go to that, but I got tied up. So how was it with you and the guys rolling in there?
How was
the event?
That is, for our area, that's the premier C10 truck show. And it was, I think there was pushing about 450 trucks there.
Wow.
And we did a little barbecue here the night before. We had a couple guys, Ronnie Welch, C10 Talk, rolled up, and, you know, we had Grinder, you know, TV here, and, you know, a few other guys, you know, came, and, you know, Buddy Hector up in Reno there, we all did a little barbecue here at the shop, and had, you know, kind of give guys a pre-game show thing, and then we all, you know, went and rolled over to Auburn in the morning, we had about five trucks rolling over, and then we met up, and they did a big, massive cruise of probably about 100 trucks, went on a cruise, and they have a pre-party, you know, and then it's a whole weekend event.
So how's the scene over there? It was just a bunch of like-minded people out there.
Everybody into trucks, and it's a good group of guys. Like, it's, you roll up, and everybody's just like, oh, man, hey, you need a beer?
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, it's just over there. Have at it. And, oh, you need a taco. You look like you're hungry. Here, have a taco. And, You know, everybody's just, it's open armed. And it doesn't matter what truck you have with the C10 club. It's just, hey, man, you got a C10. Come on down, hang out.
Hey, what was that one? It's the cost effective build. It was on your Instagram page. It was a...
The Poor Boy Autorama.
Yeah, I love it. Poor Boy Autorama. Tell me about that.
Poor Boy Autorama. That is Jeremy, the cold cart. That's his deal. So every year, Jeremy had an accident, I think about 10 years ago, roughly in that ballpark. And so he does a thing every single year. He just challenges himself. He's like, you know what I want to do? I want to take a car. I'm going to pull it out of the field. I'm going to give myself a budget of $1,500, $3,000, whatever. I got to make it run and drive, and I'm driving it to a destination. So he told me, you know, we were talking about this year, and he's like, I'm doing that this year. I'm going to take that old Ford. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it with you. And then it turned into everybody's like, we're going to do it with you too. We're all doing it. So we all put ourselves a budget of $3,000. You had to start with a stock vehicle. Well, I didn't. I cheated. I started with my high school truck. Cause he's like, he kind of, it's like going back to your high school roots of you don't have money. You can't, you know, you don't have all the resources to be like, oh man, I got all these parts sitting on the shelf. I'll just throw them at this truck. It's, you have to, you know, you have to use what you got.
You got to play by the rules.
And that was a deal. So we did it down in Vegas, and you had to drive it there. That was the other deal. You couldn't trailer it. It had to drive.
Yeah.
We had a guy in Auburn, Jeff at All-Star Powder Coating. He came over and he bought a car here in Carson City. This Chrysler, bought the car, him and Darren jump in it. They drove the thing all the way to Vegas and back. And we were all joking on, there's no way that thing's getting good gas mileage. Sure, it was getting like 16 miles a gallon. We're going, how? And they drove the thing there and back.
Oh, man.
And, you know, and Jeremy's Ford, he built this little Ford and super bitching little truck. He went way beyond his budget. He blew his budget. I used a truck that wasn't even it's highly modified.
You can't cheat on your own show.
We weren't judging ourselves. It didn't matter. But we had some guys that came out that really actually stayed true to it, and it was pretty impressive.
Hey, man,
probably be bigger next year.
We're going to get you involved next year.
I got to be there. When is it?
We did it in March, so I don't know if we're changing the dates. I got to talk to it's Jeremy's little brainchild, so it's his baby.
Hey, here's one of the things that I always kind of worry about. I think like your son is 1 year old. Two.
He's two and a half.
Two and a half. He's out there. He's spraying on the truck, or he's taking stuff apart already, so he's going to be that guy. But, you know, a lot of, you know, people kind of getting away from the older stuff, and everybody wants to buy new stuff. What do you say to anybody out there who has any kind of mechanical inclinations or is interested in cars and trucks to pursue their dreams in fabrication, paint, body, or whatever?
Man, I think the younger generations of kids, we got to try and get into the hot rodding, because hot rodding's dying. It seems like it's just, you get these guys, oh man, I want a Prius and I want gas mileage and I want this. And, you know, hot rodding's it needs to be around. You know, you get these kids more involved, you know, the younger generation. And, you know, another friend of mine has a company called Origins, and it's geared towards kids, you know, get the younger kids involved, get this younger generation. Cause that's how I was brought into it from him, is you start young, you know, get into it.
I think the younger generations are interested in like the Camaros or the LSs, and because I take my Camaro to a car show, a lot of the young kids check that thing out.
Yeah,
more so than some of these guys that have $200,000 in their hot rod with a 350 Chevy in it.
Yeah, but just as far as it's about, you know, man, I took Ag Mechanics. I don't know if they even have that anymore. I think I discontinued it in Edna. And, you know, my lawnmower engine that I rebuilt with my buddy Chad didn't run. Our 283 Chevy didn't run. But I just didn't stick with it. But I wish I would have. But I'm still involved. I just got to take my stuff to get worked on. But it's getting the kid to do stuff like that, whether it's welding or whatever.
Anything,
man,
yeah.
Dude, if I see another kid with an iPad, I don't know. I know that's today's technology.
Yeah,
but it's...
Well, you do use, you know, if like you're into the car stuff and you're into, you know, wanting to work on stuff, there's plenty of resources. You look on YouTube and a ton of videos on, hey, man, this is exactly how you take something apart. And, you know, we're trying to try and start doing a lot more videos as well and get, it's a tool to go, okay, you can look on there and see, oh, that's how that comes apart. And that's, you kind of just go for it sometimes and roll the dice and go, hey, man, if I fail, then you try and find somebody who knows what they're doing. I mean, we have issues in here, and every now and then you have to call in other friends going, hey, man, you know anything about this? Because this is, we're having problems.
But you know what? It's a very friendly community.
Yeah.
Again, I guess because it's like-minded people. And,
yeah.
It's helping each other out.
And younger generation, you know, or anybody really, if you're into it and you just want to kind of, you know, find other guys, look on Instagram, find like C10 Club, you know, guys like that. Hey, we're working on this week, and anybody want to come over and help out? Or we're doing this, or shops, you know, sometimes need apprentices or something like that. Hey, we'll come sweep the floor. That's how I started the jet ski shop, was sweeping the floor. And, you know, you learn a lot. You learn how to work on these things.
I'm going to come over here and help you with your C50s to help you get ready for SEMA.
Come on over.
my buddies used to tell me, go, Steve, having you help is like losing a good hand. Hey, Butch, do you got anything to promote? Are you on Instagram, or you just
I'm retired.
Hey, Butch is retired. He's a Vietnam veteran.
He thinks
Travis,
he's
retired. Travis, his dad. Well, he's almost retired. He loves his hot rods. He's building his badass truck. It was good talking with you down the podcast. I'm glad you came down. Travis, thanks for the time.
Absolutely.
And
anytime.
Again, check him out on Instagram, CTP Concepts.
Or Facebook, too. Facebook, CTP Concepts as well.
Out here in God's country, Nevada. And that's the bottom line, because I said so. All right, let's give big ups to GEICO for being a loyal sponsor of the Steve Austin Show. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off into the sunset. We will be packing up and headed back to the mean streets of Los Angeles in the next few days. Hey, man, I've got some exciting news coming up. Can't let the cat out of the bag, but I've got some good things going on. I'll be able to announce very shortly. Had some irons in the fire, and they're starting to heat up and get ready to take them out of the fire and start some stuff up. So good news, good things coming right around the corner. I want to thank my guests for being on the podcast today. Travis Pruis of CTP Concepts. Man, if you've got a pickup truck or a car or whatever, if you want some work done to it, custom fabrication, whatever you can dream of, Travis can accomplish. Dude is a hell of a hand who does badass work. I've seen it up close and personal. And also his dad, Butch Pruis, Vietnam veteran, for just shooting the breeze and telling hot rod stories and how they got into cars and hot rods and boats and all that stuff. I love talking about cars, trucks, and all that stuff, so it was a breath of fresh air for me to do a podcast and talk about these kind of things and step a little bit away from some of the things we've been talking about. Send me comments, questions, or whatever to questions@steveaustinshow.com. If you've got somebody you want me to interview or something you want me to talk about, I'll check my email and respond accordingly. Appreciate it. Hey, best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. And if you ain't in California, but you're over there in Massachusetts, Broken Skull IPA has arrived from El Segundo Brewing Company. Also, Mayberry IPA and Citra. Check out those three badass beers are over in Massachusetts right now. Go to the El Segundo Brewing Company website, click on the interactive map on the Broken Skull IPA, and find a location near you that carries that beer. Also, stay tuned. Heads up, New York and New Jersey, we are headed your way. Shortly, we'll be there in October. Check a location. It will be on the map to find a store near you to check out what I call the best IPA in America. And don't forget, the King of Attitude shirts are available now at the Pro Wrestling Tees store. Check out ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin for these badass shirts, along with all of my other Broken Skull Ranch apparel. And if you're looking to get either the Cold Steel Broken Skull knife or the Working Man's knife, you can get them at my Amazon store. Amazon's got the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin or go directly to the Cold Steel Knives website and check out all their badass sharp objects and other things that they make. And if you see me out there in the trails, you will see me proudly riding a Kawasaki. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially Fox, Zorro.com, Roman, Geico, and betonline.ag. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.